Thanks for checking out the Reveal Vineyard podcast. Our mission is simple. Find God, find others, find yourself. That's it. We hope through these conversations, your spirit will be stirred. For more information on Reveal, you can visit our website at www.revealvineyard.com.
We're on week number 3 of our series called Margin, Life with Room to Breathe. And we've been talking about creating space in our lives. And I think what I hope is that what we'll all agree upon 3 weeks into this series is that life is much, much better with margin. That life is better with room to breathe. And if I was to ask you which is better, going to bed really not knowing how you're going to be able to pay for all the bills that particular month, or going to bed knowing that you have enough financial margin to cover everything, which is better, coming home after a day of fighting traffic and pushing to make every light, needing to be two places at once and doing so much that you don't really enjoy much of what you do, or coming home after a day that had enough margin that you could actually enjoy the day? And I think all of us would agree that life is better with breathing room. Life is better with margin. And so we've been talking about creating space, creating margin in 2014, creating margin in our schedule and in our relationships, and margin in our finances, margin in our even moral margins, that we're not walking on the edge flirting with a moral collapse. And so we've been looking at this idea of creating space for 2014. Last year, your motto may have been full speed ahead, but today our motto is margin. Here's how we've defined margin. It is the amount available beyond what is necessary. Or we said it is the difference between what you have and what you need. So if you have $2,500 a month to pay the bills and your bills, what you need is $2,000, then you have a $500 margin working in your advantage. But if you have $2,000 a month and what you need is $2,500 a month, you have a negative margin working against you. If you have an appointment and you arrive 15 minutes early, it's at 3 o'clock, you get there at 2:45, you have a 15-minute margin working in your favor. It is the difference between what you have and what you actually need. Now, we're going to add a new definition. We'll put it on the screen. Margin is the space between our current pace and our limit. Now, think about that. Margin is really the space between our current pace, our active lifestyle, how hard we're charging, how much we're doing, how much we're spending, and what our limit is. Because here's what I know about all of us. We all have a limit. We all have this edge that if as we approach it, there is this breaking point, that moment of greatest stress where you and I give way, where we collapse. We have a limit. Somewhere out there in every arena of your life, there is an edge and there is a limit. And the closer that we get to that edge, the more that we decrease our margin, hear me, the more that our quality of life begins to break down. Because margin is the space between our current pace and our limit. We talked in week 1 about 3 things that happen whenever our margins decrease. We'll put it on the screen as a review. We said that when your margins decrease, stress increases. You know that when your financial margin decreases, your stress always goes up. We said that our focus narrows, that we put our energy into that which is the decreasing margin. We have to exclude other things, other relationships, because our focus narrows on that area where there is decreased margin. And when our focus narrows, relationships suffer, because we are never at our best when margins decrease. Now, let me just say, I've not told you anything new in the first 2 weeks. You know that life is better with margin. And yet, for whatever reason, we continue to push ourselves to the edge. And in our desire to create the good life, many times we actually create a life that we don't even enjoy. That we pack so much into it, that we ride so close on the edge, whatever, relationships with our time, financially, morally, that in order to get the most out of life and experience life, we're so close on the edge that there's no margin, and one step sends us into disaster. But we know that. And so today we're going to talk about another difficult subject that you already know about, but it is one that we all need to hear. And because of the nature of the topic today, I've asked our ushers to lock the doors and no one can leave. because we're talking about financial margin. And so I'm just going to tell you up front that nobody leaves. There's no emergency bathroom breaks. Just pee your pants, all right? That's just, listen, this isn't our building, so who cares? I mean, really, no, I'm joking. No emergency phone calls, you know. What? Oh, God, why? I got to go. No, nobody leaves. I'm joking. You can leave at any time. I get paid the same. But hopefully, you're going to hear what we have to say. Now, let me start by saying we're talking about finances. I understand why we hate this topic in the church. I totally get it. The church has abused this topic often for self-gain. And when I say the church, I don't think that we at Reveal have. I mean, in 6 years, I've probably talked on giving, although this really isn't a message on giving. I've spoken on giving twice in 6 years. The numbers are in my favor, okay? It's not something that I don't want to push you and guilt you into that. I believe in generous giving, but I'm not going to guilt you into it. And so, but I understand why we don't like this topic, because let's face it, as a whole, the universal church, especially in America, has abused this topic with pastors that use all kind of guilt and all kind of strong-arm tactics to get us to part with our money, that if you don't, they're going to guilt you into giving, or if you don't give X amount, God's not going to hear your prayers, and we walk around in fear, and we use all kinds of gimmicks. And true story, I've seen stuff on TV where there was a money cometh prayer cloth that you take this prayer cloth and you put it in your wallet and magically it attracts money to you. I'm being serious. That it attracts money to you. Now, when I was single, I could have used to get the babes prayer cloth. That would have been something I was interested in. I'd just be happy now if there was a weight goeth prayer cloth. That could be something I'm interested in. Yeah, see, I can sell you one, actually. And so I've seen this stuff, these gimmicks that the church uses to get us to part with our money. And there was one thing called an end time wealth glove where you put the glove on your hand, you took the glove off, and then you filled it with as much money as you can, and then you send it into a ministry, and God will release to you 100 times what you put in that glove. Let me just tell you, I get it. I get it why we're so apprehensive about this subject being spoken about in church, because we've abused it. Now, let me tell you something about myself and about Reveal. I made a commitment before we started this church that, to the best of my ability, I will not allow the offering bucket to determine how we run church. And so, for example, a couple weeks ago, we did our Christmas service out at Marley Park. You may have not noticed, but we don't take an offering for that. I was telling a pastor friend of mine that what we're doing for Christmas, and the first question was, well, how are you taking an offering? And my response was, well, we don't take an offering. And they were like shocked, like, what, you don't take an offering? I mean, it would be really awkward to try to pass that bucket and, you know, everyone's sitting on blankets and stuff like that. And so I don't want the offering bucket to determine how we do church. Next week, we go out and we're going to serve our community. There's no offering that we take at that. And inevitably, someone asks, usually in the ministry, well, how are you going to make up for that amount? My response is, well, I guess I'm going to need to do what I tell our church to do, and that is trust God. That we're going to have to trust God that if we're faithful, that God is big enough to fill in the gaps when we're doing that which he calls us to do. And so I get it. There is this dilemma and there is this rub. And I'll also confess to you that within the last 12 months as a church, we've had about 15 families who have moved out of Surprise. And with that, giving goes down. And I'm telling you this because it helps keep me accountable. This year, when I'm looking at, you know, the Christmas and the next week, I started to panic because I'm thinking, how are we going to make up money that we already are down on because of people that have left? And I'll be honest with you, I thought, maybe we should just do a regular Sunday service and then we'll kind of do the Christmas thing afterwards. And maybe we should just kind of do a short little service on the service day and then we'll send everybody out. And I had to remind myself that I'm not going to have the offering bucket determine who we are as a church. I tell you that because I'm like you. I understand how we hate it when someone talks about finances because, let's be honest, it grips us. And unless we're constantly fighting against it, it has a hold on our hearts. And so today, I just want to tell you that I'm with you on all of this. I understand how it feels. I have the same struggles with it, but we're going to move forward in it and see what God has to say to us about this area of financial margin. Now, if you're not a Christian and you're here today, maybe someone bribed you or your wife talked you into it, what I'm about to tell you is good advice. It'll keep you out of loads of stress and sleepless nights, and it's a better way to live. But if you're a follower of Christ, let me just tell you that what we're going to talk about today is not optional. I mean, it's really not. If you proclaim that Jesus is the Lord of your life, then what we're talking about is mandatory, and it has nothing to do with giving to reveal, believe me. It's not optional. Here's why: because how we spend our money says a lot about our faith and ultimately where we place our trust. You see, my dilemma with, well, you know, do we kind of do the service thing and not take the offering? What it really comes down to, it's an issue of trust. Am I going to trust that God is big enough, or am I going to take it into my own hands? And that's what we're going to explore a little bit today. So I'm going to ask you to cut me a little bit of slack as we move forward. So let's start with debunking a lie that has been placed upon American consumers, and that is this: that a higher standard of living means a better quality of life. And on the surface, we would think, well, yeah, I mean, that's true. It seems to make sense, and marketing gurus make millions of dollars to come up with commercials and ads to make us think that a higher standing of living, the more stuff that we acquire, actually means that we have a better quality of life, so that a better car and a better home and better clothing and better jewelry and better clothing or better stuff leads to a better life. And you know what? The truth is, we bought it. I mean, we bought into it, and I'm going to push against you a little bit, that if we can't afford the standard of life that we think is the key to have a better quality of life, we'll figure out another way to buy it. And it's caused us to go into either putting it on plastic or taking out a loan, because we believe that this thing, a higher standard of living, also will mean a better quality of life. And last week, I told you that we talked about time, that our time is limited, and so we have to limit how we spend our time. Well, money's a little bit different, in that although you can't borrow more time, you can always borrow more money. And so even though our money is limited, we can always get more. Someone out there is probably willing to loan you more. Interest rate might go over that 20 mark, or, you know, someplace like that, but we can't borrow time, but we can always borrow more money. And let's be honest. We as Americans have tried to buy our way into a better quality of life. Now, the truth is that there are many today that if I gave you the microphone, you could testify that you bought your way into a better standard of living, thinking it would give you a better quality of life, and so you had all the nice stuff, but what happened in doing so, you stretched your margin, or you decreased your margin so thin that it actually put so much stress on you that which you got thinking it would create a better quality of life actually created a lower quality of life. Because you know, and I know, what it's like to live under the pressure of a life with no margin. You know what it's like to have that car and you are so thrilled with it until 6 months later you start to think, I gotta stroke that check for $450. Where's it gonna come from? And then that stress and that pressure begins to mount. And although on the outside we can have a high standard of living, on the inside there can be an extremely low quality of life. So let's just start with the basic question. If God really loves you, and if God is really concerned for your life and really wants the best for you, which do you think God is more interested in you having? Is God more interested in you having a higher standard of living or a better quality of life? If you're married today, would you rather have a great car or a great marriage? Some of you are debating that, right? And you're like, whoa, what kind of, are we talking a European car? What are we talking about here? Don't let your wife start seeing you doing this, all right? Which would you rather have? You can have a high standard of living, you can have a great quality of life. And we can borrow our way and stretch our finances into the point of breaking to achieve a higher standard of living, but in most cases, it lowers our quality of life. Stress increases, our focus narrows, and relationship suffers, and you may have the greatest house and the nicest car, but when that garage door opens, everybody goes running because the family is stressed and no one is at their best. And so the best thing that some of us can do today, if this is one of the only things you're going to get from this message, one of the best things that we can do today is to lower our standard of living. Now, some of you are offended by that because you're thinking, this is America. We don't back down and we don't do less. One of the best things that you can do for yourself is to lower your standard of living. Is to get out from under the car payment that's choking you. Maybe to downsize a house. To maybe get rid of cable and just take on Netflix. To create some financial margin and some breathing room. Let me give you some facts about money. Last week I gave you the facts about time, facts about money. Here's the first one. No surprise, all of us are living on a percentage of our income. Some of us are living on, 90%. You give whatever, 10% or whatever. Some are living on 80% and you give a little and you put some in the bank, and some maybe are really good and you're only living on 60% and you give some and you save a lot. And some of us are living on 100% of our income. Some of us are living on 105% of our income. But all of us are living on a percentage of income. Nothing earth-shattering, I know. Look at number two. You and I believe that if we had a little more, life would be better. That if we just had a little bit more, life would be better. But there's a problem, and let me explain what it looks like for you visual learners. We're going to put this up, put that chart up if you could. All right, so on the left side, there's time, and on the other side, there is money or your income. And hopefully over the course of your life, that your income tracking looks like this. That your income is moving up and to the right. I mean, that's a good place to be. That over time, your income is increasing. That's what we would all hope for anyways. And, the economy hasn't been so great. And so some of our income, looks like this next one. If we go ahead and put that up, it's all been all over. You're up and down and the economy's bad. And some of us maybe just, your income looks like this. It's just flat line. It's a boop. That's just, the way it's been. But all of us have a percentage of our income, and we all hope that it's moving up and to the right. And in an ideal world with financial margin, our spending looks like this next slide. Our income is going up. Spending is also going up. You have children and things have to happen. You have school and college and buying more clothing and things like that. But in an ideal world, our spending is not tracking with our income. And that space between the two, between our income and our spending, that space between the two is our margin. The wider the space, the better life is, really, because we have more breathing room. Now, we all want this space. Because in this space, regardless of whether you're single or married or divorced or you have kids or you have kids and wish they'd move out, whatever your situation is, we all want this because in that space is where we breathe easier. And we sleep better, and you get along with your spouse better, and your family and friends better, and you can concentrate more, and you're less stressed, and you're more generous, and generally, you're happier because you have financial margin. But many of us, we live this way. Oh, yeah. There's our income, and then our spending is, I actually tried to put them right on top of each other, but you lost color of the line. And a lot of the times we live like this. We get a $350 raise. I'm going to get me a $350 car. Come on, we've all done it, right? I just paid off a $150 dental bill a month for braces. I'm going to get me a $150 gym membership. That our spending increases with our income. And unfortunately, some of us aren't here. Some of us are on the next slide. Wah, wah. Where our spending is actually outpacing our income. And I'm not going to ask for a show of hands, but several of us would say, yeah, that's kind of where I've been. See, the reason that if I had a little more, life would be better doesn't work is because we're perpetual spenders. And the more that we make, the more that we spend. Which is why the number three fact of life is true. You felt the same way when you made less. All of us think that if I had a little more, life would be better. But all of us felt that same way when we made far less than we're making today. Because a little more is a moving target. Here's what I mean. Growing up, I remember 8, 9, 10 years old, I told my mom that I was going to be rich. And I believed it. I mean, as a young kid, I felt it sincerely. I felt I was going to be rich, and I didn't feel that after I got married. That all departed. But I felt as a kid that I'm going to be wealthy. And here's what started to happen. Went to work. I'm not wealthy, by the way. Well, I guess I am. You'll get to that in a second. I went to work at Taco Bell making $3.35 an hour. Any Taco Bell alumni have worked at Taco Bell? Yeah? Reunion afterwards. Let's go to Taco Bell. You can buy me a burrito. I made $3.35 an hour, and after a year of hard work, my manager sat down with me and said, Marty, because of all of your hard work, I put into corporate for you to get a nickel raise. I was working 20 hours a week. Being the math genius I am, I'm like, thanks for the buck before taxes. And I remember thinking that if I could just make a little more, life would be better. And so I got a job at Drug Emporium making like $4.05 an hour. And I thought, man, this is perfect. I'm 16 years old. I'm making more than most of my friends who are at minimum wage. And I think I made like $4,000 that year. And you know, but I was spending $4,000 as well. Because, you know, once you're a kid, you get money and you're spending it. And I thought, man, if I could get a job making $10,000 a year, just a little more, I could have some margin. And I went and took a job at Sears Automotive selling batteries and tires. And actually, by the time I was in a junior, senior in high school, I made $16,000 a year working part-time. And I thought, perfect. But then I started spending more, even though I was making more. And I remember thinking, if I could get a job making $25,000 a year, I would be set, because let's from 16 to 25, if I made a little more, and I went to Phoenix Motors Company working in the body shop, making about $25,000 a year. And I thought, this is perfect. And then something happened. I bought a really nice car. And now my financial margin was gone again. I remember thinking, if I could just make a little bit more, and I got promoted to the service drive. And I remember thinking, if I could make $40,000 a year, got promoted to the service drive, made $40,000 a year. 45, actually. I thought, this is fantastic. I'm 21 years old at this point and thinking, this is great. And then I met a wonderful Texan and we got married. And I thought, if I could make a little bit more. And I remember thinking that if I could make $60,000 a year, I would be set and ready to go. And at 25, my W-2 was $62,000. And you know what I thought? If I could just make $80,000. Because now I got two cars in this house and we want to start a family. Here's the reality. A little more is always a little further away. And it really doesn't matter how much you make. We've always felt that and we will always feel that until we stop spending. Our spending stops tracking with our earnings. And so if you think back over your life, regardless of what you're making today, and you're thinking a little more would make life better, you probably felt the same thing when you were making considerably more. And regardless of how much you make this year, at the end of the year, you will most likely be thinking the same thing, that a little more would make life better. Because it's a moving target, and it never stops, and it's always just a little bit further away. And so we get caught in this perpetual cycle thinking a little more would make life better. But the problem is that most of us, hear me, most of us don't have an earnings problem. We have a spending problem. Let's just say it. We have a spending problem. Because the reality of it is we are already rich and we don't know it. Here's what I mean. You know that if you make $37,500 a year, you are in the top 4% of wage earners in the world today. And if you make $45,000 or more, you are in the top 1% of wage earners on the planet. I don't know how else we could say that you're rich. And I'm rich. I mean, we have this thing of, you know, 60% of the world lives on $2 a day, and most people who are in other parts of the world would be in awe that we have toilets that flush, and we don't actually see where the waste goes. I was in India a couple years ago, and they, you know, they have odd toilets, but they actually had a urinal in a restroom, and I used the urinal, no visual images, and then I felt this, you know, it was hot, I'm in flip-flops, and I felt this sprinkling. Well, they had a urinal, but the pipe went nowhere except on my feet. They would be amazed at the systems of sewage that we have that carries it away somewhere and we don't know where it goes. We're rich and we don't understand it. We don't even realize it. You're going to get in, walk out of church and get in a car, some of us in separate cars, and drive home or drive to a restaurant. You're not taking a rickshaw anywhere and you're not walking anywhere. And when you get home, you're going to put your car into a house made specifically for your car called in a garage, which is bigger than most people's homes. Look, $45,000 a year, and you are in the top 1% of wage earners, and our response to that, my response to that is, big deal. Let me change it for you so you can see. What if I could say instantly, today, right now, with the snap of a finger, I could put you in the top 1% of best-looking people in the entire world? Someone said they're already there. I woke up this morning, looked in the mirror, and said, oh my God. He woke up, looked in the mirror, and said, I am God, all right? Now, you put it in that perspective, and everyone's like, man, if I could be in the top 1% of the best-looking people in the world, that'd be fantastic. Guys, let me put it this way. What if I could put you in the top 1% of best athletes on the planet? Now you're thinking, that'd be amazing. What if I could put you in the top 1% of the most talented people on earth? And all of us would jump at that chance and think that would be phenomenal. The majority of us are in the top 1 to 4% of wage earners on the planet, and it's no big deal. The reality of it is, we are rich. And Jesus said this, because we're rich, we are at a disadvantage spiritually, because it's harder for the rich to trust God. See, on our currency, we have this four little words that says, in God we trust, and it rolls off our lips easily and it sounds good. But in reality, for most Americans, and please hear me, for most Christians, it's really not the case. Because it's hard to trust in God completely when money grips us. And if we're honest, we believe in God, but we trust in money. We trust that money is the key to our future, trust that money brings security, trust that money brings happiness, and Jesus hints to the idea that the rich will have so much that they never really have to trust God. You see, I've never had to pray Matthew 6:11, give us this day our daily bread, and actually believe in it, because my pantry's overflowing. I mean, look at me, it's overflowing. And you've probably never had to pray that and believe it either, because we're rich. Jesus said this about a rich young ruler in Matthew 19. It was a rich, intelligent, well-educated guy. Comes to Jesus, says, what do I need to do to have eternal life? And Jesus said, go away. Well, he gives this answer that he'd never given before. We'll put it on the screen in verse 21. Jesus said to him, if you wish to be complete, go and sell all your possessions and give it to the poor, and you will have treasure in heaven, and come and follow me. And we have to ask, why did Jesus say this? Because we know that our financial gain or our financial giving is not linked to our salvation. Jesus knew something about this individual, and he knew what held his heart. And he said, if you want to really follow me, you're going to have to trust in me even more than you trust in money. And look at what he said. Verse 22, what the young man did. And when the young man heard this, he went away sad because he had great wealth. And then Jesus continues this conversation with his disciples, and it's a painful one. In verse 23, he said to his disciples, I tell you the truth, it is hard for a rich man to enter the kingdom of heaven. Here's what Jesus is getting at. 2,000 years ago, hear me please, Jesus knew that the number one competitor for your heart and my heart will be money. And it is. That's why we hate hearing about this message. That's why we hate it when people ask us to give. That's why I hate it when money has to go out. Because the number one competitor for our heart is money. Jesus gave this idea of two masters in a parable 2,000 years ago in Luke 16, where he said in verse 13, he said, no one can serve two masters. Now, if you have two employers that are over you, bosses that are over you, you know how difficult it is when they have two sets of rules. Or maybe you came from a divorced home and mom has one set of rules and dad has another set of rules. And Jesus said, you really can't serve two masters. And here's why. He says, because you're going to hate the one and love the other, or you'll be devoted to the one and you will despise the other. I love being with dad because he doesn't give me any rules. I love being with mom because she lets me stay up late and dad's the strict one. Jesus is saying, you're always going to lean one way or the other. Now listen. Notice the power to the end of his words. He says, you cannot serve both God and money. I mean, we would have thought, well, no, he meant you can't serve both God and the devil, right? No, that's not what he even said. Listen, let's just realize something. Jesus knew 2,000 years ago as our creator that the number one competitor for your heart and for my heart is going to be money. And we hate hearing about it because ultimately it comes down to who do we trust more? Malachi 3 is a passage that most people, most Christians know about. And if you're a Christian, you've heard this passage preached. And You know, we talked last week that God, when he established Israel as a new society, set up margins for them. They were a slave state, remember, and they came out and he set up these margins. And one of the margins he said was that you don't get to keep everything you make, that at least 10% will be used towards the poor and religious institutions, and it was called a tithe, 10%. Now, what started to happen, that's the way most of the time preached in Malachi 3, was that Israel began to get sloppy and they began to do leftover giving. And instead of giving the best, they began to give what was left over. You know what that is. It's at the end of the week. If you got $3, that's what's left and that's, you know, what you're giving. And God said some really harsh words to these individuals. And here's what he said in Malachi 3. He asked, well, will a man rob God? And yet you rob me. But you ask, how do we rob God? And God says, you're robbing me through your tithes and offering. Now listen, please. Tithing was a reminder. It was a trust issue that God can do more with your 90% than you can do with 100%. Now listen. There is a lot of debate over this passage. And for you longtime Christians, anytime you hear Malachi 3, you're like, I'm shutting down. I don't even want to hear about this. Now listen, please. It's hotly debated whether tithing was an Old Testament principle or a New Testament principle. Does it carry over? Churches have even split over this idea of tithing. Here's my reveal, theologically correct answer. Who cares? I mean, really, because let me tell you, the core of the message was this: everything belongs to me and you're spending it like it's yours. That's Old Testament, New Testament, wherever you want to read. That God, who is the creator and the sustainer of all, said everything that you have is mine, and yet you're treating it like you own it all. And you've stretched yourself to the point where you have no margin, and God is stepping in and says, you're robbing me because I gave it to you and you've wasted it. See, that's the core of the message. Honestly, I don't care what you think about tithing. I don't, so I've never preached it. But one thing that I do know is that everything you own and everything I own is God's. And God says, if I own it, you better be a good steward of it. And the reality of it is, let's be honest, we're not all that good stewards of it. See, that's the core of this. And for me, I say, I don't care about the tithing issue. I just don't. I said 10% is probably a good place to start. But even to hear that, our blood starts to boil because money is the number one competitor for our heart. And it really comes down to a trust issue. And so let's get on to the bigger question. Not about tithing, but does God own everything that you have? And if he does, how are we demonstrating that? I mean, I think that there's a problem that we're living with such little financial margin and we need to get it corrected. Here's where we're ending. When we live with so little financial margin, we are robbing ourselves. We're robbing ourselves emotionally with peace and freedom. We're robbing ourselves of relationships because we're never at our best. Robbing ourselves of our ability to give generously when people are in need. And your heart may go out, but your pockets stay closed because you can't help someone. You know, there are some great giving stories in this room of helping out a neighbor who was in need, or, you know, dropping 100 bones on that waitress who, you know, at Christmas time and you saw her crying, or you helped someone and they were like in awe that you would do it. There are some great giving stories. You know what I never hear of? Great spending stories. I never hear of someone saying, I was in the finance room at the Chevy store. Oh, Jesus, help me. And I'm signing that contract for 6 years at $500 a month. You never hear spending stories. Because in the end, it's really not that big of a deal. We rob ourselves, and then God says, you rob me. Because you've taken everything I've given you, and you milked it. And we have this idea that if God put it in my hand, it's for me. And God says, it's not all for you. So the reason that many of us can't be generous, you be generous to where you want to be generous. I mean, we can talk about that another time. Is because we're driving our generosity. We're living in our generosity. And you're wearing your generosity. You know, many years ago, we had a big motorhome. And our generosity sat in the driveway. We had to get rid of that thing. Lower standard of living to increase quality of life. So here's the only thing I'm asking you to do today. This is it. I'm asking you to make a choice. To make a choice that you're not going to live with no financial margin anymore. Because what I know about all of us is we are all smart enough to figure out what we need to do, right? There's numerous resources out there, so I'm not going to give you lists 1 through 10. There's more than enough stuff out there, but start by making a choice. Get with your spouse over lunch and say, what are we going to do? I'm not living like this anymore. I'm tired of not going to bed at night and waking up at 2 a.m. in panic attacks because I don't know where our money's going to come from or how we're going to be able to work it into our... I'm done with it and make a choice. Now, if some of you have no idea what to do, here's what I would suggest. Go to the bookstore and pick up Financial Peace Revisited by Dave Ramsey. All right, it's a good place to start. Now, some of you are going to say, I can't afford the book. It's going to be $14, and I can't. So here's what you're to do. You're to go to Barnes & Noble, get the book, pull up a nice comfy chair. Don't buy a coffee because you can't afford the book, right? And all I want you to do is open to page 67 and start reading chapter 8. That's all you need to do. When you're done, don't drool on it. Close the book back up. Put it back on the bookshelf. Like, I'm a really slow reader, and I can't. I don't have time for that. All right, here's what you're to do: just go to the bookstore and take out your smartphone, the one that you may not be able to afford. And I want you to just open up to page 90 and 91, take a picture, put the book back, go home, and read those two pictures. There's no excuse. Now look, here's the last thing I want to leave you with. Okay, I want is better than I owe. I heard Andy Stanley say that, and I thought, that is so true. I want is better than I owe. And I am right there with you. Everything I spoke to you, it comes back to me. I understand how money grips us because it's the number one competitor of our heart. And truly, how we spend our money is a reflection as to how much we trust God and how much He is the Lord over every area of our life. And I think living with without financial margin has robbed us too much, and we need to make a change. And it starts with you making a choice that God is going to be Lord over everything, including finances. Stand with me. I thought about wearing a big red bullseye on my shirt today, those of you that were going to throw things at me. Next week, you're going to have a little break in that we're going to be out painting and doing other type of service projects, and so... you'll have a free pass next week, but I do want to ask that you would come out and help us serve and serve our community. And again, 9:30, not 10 o'clock, 9:30 on the hardscape, we'll meet, and we'll have the supplies and stuff like that. We'll go an hour and a half, 2 hours. We'll come back. We'll have some food here and stuff to eat. So join me as we pray. God, I hope this was an eye-opening message for us. And we talked about a lot of information, and so I would ask that you would allow what needs to rest on each heart to specifically rest upon us. Lord, for some it really is an issue of trust, and for most of us it's an issue of trust, that we believe in God but we trust in money for our happiness and for a better quality of life. Lord, let us start to strip that down and begin to trust in you. And it comes down to trusting that you can do more with the less that we claim as our own. God, I pray you would get us to a point where there is financial margin. And I realize, Lord, for us, it's going to be small steps, and it may take a year or 2 years or 3 years. For some, it may be in a second job for 6 months to get the money up that they can sell a car that they're flipped in. But I pray you would give us a plan that we would move forward in this, and that at this time next year, we're not in the same position. And so, Lord, would you speak over us and to us and remind us that it really is all yours. And so, Lord, I pray that this message just doesn't fall as we leave here today. Because I believe in your love and your goodness for us. You want us to have a better quality of life here on this earth. A life with some peace and some margin and relationships and love and laughter. And without financial margin, that's often just sucked away. And so we surrender it to you. Put us on the path of what needs to be done. next week when we gather, let us go out as a church and serve our community. Let us represent Jesus well as individuals and as a church. All for the glory of our Savior, our King Jesus. Amen. Hey, God bless you guys. Thank you for coming. Hey, invite someone back on the 1st of February. We're going to wrap up this series, and then we're going to start a new one. But invite someone back. If you're a guest, I'd love to meet you down front. God bless you guys.